Hello, hello, and welcome back to The Flick. Today, I'll be sitting down with Phil Rosen, who recently wrote an article for Flick Editorial all about the importance of the journey and not the destination, although it should be noted that Phil's destination was a best-selling book. His article, A Conversation About the Journey, How I Accidentally Wrote a Best-Selling Book, talks all about the importance to take any route you can find to find yourself, no matter how unconventional. And I'm so excited to sit down with him and talk all things writing, school, gap years, and travel.
So, hey, Phil, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Katrina. Thank you for having me today.
I'm so excited to have you on. And before we get started and talk about your article, I have to ask, what are you drinking?
Today is, of course, black coffee.
I love that. And for me, it's water because I really need to be hydrated in this moment.
All right.
But I really wanted to talk about your article because I just really enjoyed reading it. And I don't think many people can say that they accidentally wrote a best-selling book. So how does one do that?
So I, you know, admittedly, I was being a little flippant for the title, but, you know, I spent a lot of time these past couple years overseas, and that, you know, it gives one a lot of stories and a lot of things to see and people to meet. And the whole time I was over there, I was traveling, living out of Hong Kong, and I was writing every single day. And eventually I kind of put everything I had from these couple years together, and voila, there was a book. And I was just astounded at how it was received, but things just work out in the way they do sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, I just think for people who are interested in reading your book, by the way, can you say the title and where it's available?
Yeah, so it's called Everywhere But Home: Life Overseas as Told by a Travel Blogger, and you can get it on Amazon if you just search that title, Everywhere But Home, or Phil Rosen, you could search that. And yeah, this really was, it came, a lot of the writing comes from my travel blog that I started when I first left the country in 2018. And I was, just writing every single week, new articles about people and places and cultures. And that's really what led me to putting together this book. Yeah, I mean, I initially moved to Hong Kong when I graduated after college because I just didn't feel like doing what everyone else expected me to do. And I had wanted to do some traveling and live overseas before I really, quote unquote, settled down into something long term. And I feel like that's something that young people are not told they're able to do as often as they should, because usually we're advised to either go to graduate school or get a job right away, or, oftentimes moving home too. And all those fantastic options, of course, but I think there's room in the conversation for something else.
And by something else, you mean a gap year?
A gap year. Yeah. And that's, it's kind of this pretty popular term these days that people use for doing something before graduate school. I took 2 years and now I'm back in graduate school, so it was kind of two gap years. But, even the phrase gap year, I feel like in itself, it's a little limiting, because then, it like bookends your year with a deadline that, okay, now it's time to get back to reality. But why shouldn't your reality be whatever it is that doesn't encompass a typical job or graduate school right away? I think gap year is not open-ended enough.
Let's rebrand gap year. Let's come up with a new name for it.
Why not just life? You have to do what you want to do instead of what everyone else thinks you should do or expects you to do. Or even you could ask yourself, what do you expect yourself to do? And maybe that's also the wrong answer in a lot of cases.
Yeah, I feel like our passions don't always align with what we're supposed to do or what is expected of us. And you kind of alluded to that earlier, but why do you really think that is?
Well, I think it comes back to schooling. I mean, for myself, my degree was a pre-physical therapy degree, and I never ended up going to physical therapy school. And when I first was finishing my senior year, I'd applied to graduate school for exercise physiology, and I got in. But then, and a lot of my professors were saying like, "Oh, this is a great opportunity. Like, you should totally do this. It's continues your major." But then I knew that I didn't really want to continue down that line, and I was getting a degree because, I was told like a science degree would hold a lot of weight in the real world, but whatever real world means. But I always knew I was like, well, I just want to spend some time really kind of discovering how I can be a writer and testing myself as a writer and whether or not this is a viable option for me. And that's what I did. As I said, I started this blog and it gained some traction, and I found out that I could write, but I would have never found out unless I just went ahead and did it. So I think the following your passion, it doesn't always align with the major that you study if you're in college, and that can kind of be a way to forget what your passion is. And I think we end up on these paths that, while we may be good at them, like, I had good grades in kinesiology and I was fully prepared to go to graduate school or physical therapy school, but it just wasn't it for me. I just didn't see myself in it. I didn't want to do it. I had a lot of friends going into it that they were doing it and they were great at it, but I knew when I asked them, "What would your ideal job be?" None of them said physical therapy. So,
None of them said what they were studying. Interesting.
yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about your blog and kind of just travel in general, just because I think that's such an important part of
Yeah.
following your passion is actually like going places and really exploring what that is. When you were writing your blog, it was largely focused on travel, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And why do you think you were able to really unlock your writing talent during your travels?
So for me, when I, it is a bit difficult if you're staying at home where you've grown up or where you've been to college, and someone says, or you tell yourself that you have to write about something because you already know all your surroundings so well and everything's so familiar, all the people around you. And for me, I just don't, it's hard. It's hard to sit down and write anywhere, but when you're surrounded by so much unknown, so many new people and cultures, and all the language around you isn't even English, it's a much more fertile ground for writing and creativity. And, if you're sitting in a cafe in a foreign country, there's nothing familiar about that. And everything that is unfamiliar is just waiting to explode onto the paper. I do believe that.
Yeah, I know. I agree. And I think it's really experiencing a culture can unlock your creativity and, like, I don't know, your soul in so many different ways.
Yeah, I mean, you really have to, as cliche as it sounds, it forces you to get comfortable in an uncomfortable place. And eventually, that level, your own comfort zone grows and grows and grows to start encompassing all these other locations or other languages or cultures. And, even you get comfortable meeting new people in different countries or just approaching strangers. And even since I've come back to the States, like, I've seen how that's translated for me and how I can, there's just less nervousness going about my day-to-day life and conversations or speaking, any of these things. And I definitely believe if I had not taken these gap years, let's say. And I went straight into school.
Life year.
Yeah, life years, you know. If I went straight to graduate school or got a job right away after college, I don't see myself having the same kind of comfortability or confidence in my day-to-day life now.
In terms of just as a seasoned traveler, kind of for our listeners, I think they'd be really interested in your advice on the best ways to really experience a culture. Because I think sometimes people travel and they don't quite get the experience that they're looking for. How would you advise people to really get the authentic experience?
I mean, this sounds a bit inconvenient, but the best way would be to live somewhere, you know. And even so, I was living in Hong Kong, and I got a job as an English teacher, so I could afford to live there. You know, I wasn't just vacationing the whole time; I was working full time and writing on the side. So I was making enough money to support myself and then take these small side trips, but in living somewhere. So when I was living in Hong Kong, I was able to, you know, I became a local at a cafe and I got a gym membership and I was paying local taxes. And it's just, you have to learn all these little weird things that aren't typically thought of when you say the word traveling. It's like, you know, you take a trip for a week or two, you're not gonna really become a regular somewhere and you're not going to pay taxes and you won't know what office politics are like, you know, working somewhere. And those things really, I think they give you this sense of what a culture is really like. And it's hard to get that in a weekend trip or, you know, a holiday stay. And for me, I really believe that the best parts of the culture are the everyday things, not, you know, it's like in Hong Kong, Chinese New Year is a gigantic celebration and it's great. It's super fun. But then that's not what is most memorable to me. Like, what's most memorable is how every single morning people are eating noodles for breakfast, which is, you know, in California, it sounds ridiculous. But that's just how it is. And I think that's astounding. And people live in tiny shoebox apartments and skyscrapers because there's just no land available for anyone. And it's like these little things that maybe you wouldn't otherwise pick up on if you were only visiting. And I'm assuming, you know, a lot of the listeners here, they're college age students or graduates. And these a lot of these foreign countries, they're so easy to get an English teaching job. And you're pretty much the only requirement they seek is a, you know, that you speak English from either the US or the UK or Australia, South Africa, you know, one of these English speaking countries. And it's a great little way in, you know, kind of foot in the door to a new country. And you're usually hired alongside a bunch of new English teachers that are all from different countries. So it gives you a great cohort to kind of be your friend group, your social group, and people that are foreigners to that country that you can explore the country with.
Yeah. No, I think that's great advice. And building off of that, I would add if you can't, financially or time-wise, if you can't live somewhere, I think it really does make a difference if you find people who do live there to show you around. Like, not the tour guides necessarily, but just try to connect with as many people as you can and ask them questions. And I just think there's so much beauty that someone who lives there would be able to see over just you kind of figuring it out yourself and just like Googling the best place to get noodles or whatever.
Totally agree with that. And, you know, there was one time I was in Taiwan and I met this girl and she was so kind that she took me around to a bunch of these places, like local markets and local kind of hole in the wall restaurants where we got, you know, these really interesting, I don't even remember what these foods were called, but I certainly would have never thought to order them or known how to order them if I was just going around on my own to these various tourist sites or things that show up on Yelp, those things, it's like, and they're great in their own right, but it's not really what locals do, at least from what I've found. And even just, striking up a conversation with someone who lives locally and just asking for recommendations, I think that's, it's scary and forces you to talk to someone new in a new country, and that can totally be scary. But it opens up the door to things that Google just can't provide.
I recently had an experience maybe a couple of years ago. So for those of you who don't know, and it's probably most of you, I was raised in Singapore. And a while, maybe a couple of years ago, we went back to Singapore. And for the first day, we kind of just went to all of the places that we used to go and all of our old haunts, which was cool and really fun, you know, to go to your favorite restaurant 10 years later. But then we quickly realized like places change and we need to ask, you know, someone who lives there, like, what's the cool place to go now? Because we're going to all the places that were cool 10 years ago.
Well, I actually didn't know that you were raised in Singapore. How old were you when you moved away?
I came back to the States when I was seven.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. I don't know if I've met anyone here from Singapore. I don't think so, actually.
I mean, I was born in San Francisco and we moved to Singapore when I was about one.
Wow.
Yeah. We just moved around a
That's
lot.
amazing. I think that's great. When I was in Singapore last, geez, what was it? October maybe. And I absolutely loved it. It was very like artificial feeling, like super modern, super clean.
It feels like the
Yeah,
future.
no, it really does. And it's the transportation was almost like too perfect. And I'm saying that coming from Hong Kong, where they already have great transportation, but Singapore was phenomenal and almost like so clean. It was like antiseptic in a way. But yeah, great food. And everyone speaks English, which I wasn't really prepared for. Like I didn't know that was a thing, but that was kind of cool.
I know we joke that they speak better English than we
Yeah.
do.
That's what I found too. So when I was teaching English in Hong Kong initially, a lot of my kids, and these were 3 or 4 or 5 year old kids, they were so good at English because by that point, it was already their third language after Cantonese and Mandarin. So they were learning English and I was teaching them, but they were so diligent with their studies of grammar and, just how words are constructed that they could. They were correcting me on like, even things like spelling different kind of weird words, or like where to put semicolons. And I was just like, how do you know? Like, just absurd levels of like English perfection, because they were studying it like it was a discipline rather than just like a natural language.
It's true. I've noticed like ESL, like English as a second language learners, don't say like the way that English as a first language learners do. I say it all the time. I'm not good at grammar compared to someone who's actually learned
Yeah, and
English.
even I'm a writer, and even these a lot of these grammatical rules, I have no clue what they are. I just kind of, because we grew up with English, so we just write how or r write or speak what sounds naturally, but then I would find myself just so amazed at these kids. They're it's it'd be like if we were studying a subject in school and we're just acing everything, but to them that's like their third language. So it's just amazing.
Wow. That's cute. I like that. In terms of teaching English, was that something you really enjoyed? Like, did you find it to be really fulfilling and a great way to kind of
It
travel?
was a great experience for how long it lasted. And I was teaching for about 6 months. And I think part of the experience for me was learning how the Hong Kong working culture works because it's very long hours, quite intense, like, I don't know, it's a bit of an intense vibe just working in Hong Kong because everyone is very much so a workaholic. Like they work really hard, really long hours. And the culture is so fast paced that I don't know, sometimes you catch yourself slipping trying to keep up. But the kids were incredible. I mean, I loved my kids and they were so sweet and like they were, I don't think they knew how just how bright of students they were because everyone I taught was that way. But if you were to put one of them, let's say in a local school here, they would be miles ahead of everyone else. And just because they grew up with such a like great academic discipline and they know how to study from an early age and they seem like, I don't know, it's just part of what they do. They're like, yeah, like I'm going to study for a few hours. I'm like, dude, you're 4 years old. Like, what are you saying right now? And you know, it's just things like that. So the it was a very eye-opening experience, certainly. And I think it you know, in teaching in general, I think it makes you more articulate and you can formulate your ideas verbally much better and you can communicate to different types of audiences. So I definitely grew in that sense. And then trying to teach a language on top of that, like teaching English to people that didn't speak English as their first language. That's another, just different type of communication. A lot of like body language and like nonverbal things that you have to try to convey different meanings with. It was a great experience though, and really, and a lot of it too, I did that. I taught so I could travel more. Like the more I was teaching, the more I could travel, kind of thing.
Yeah, no, I think it's great and it sounds like a really wonderful experience. And I would advise everyone to have a life year. I think just living somewhere that you're not used to living is one of the best things that you could do for
Yeah,
yourself.
I definitely agree. I mean, these you know, my 4 years in college, I learned so much in the classroom and like socializing and all my friends and professors, and that was fantastic. But I would definitely say I grew more overseas than I did in those 4 years in college. And it's hard to explain how or why, but it was just such a unconventional kind of almost like weird thing to do that I think it really forced me to adapt and to learn skills that I wouldn't have needed, let's say in a graduate program right away. But in a lot of these, they're transferable to any field. Like it's not like I was, you know, I'm studying journalism now in a graduate program, but these conversational skills or communication skills that you get from, I believe, like living in a different country and having to navigate language barriers or traveling, all these things, like anyone would really benefit. And I think it's a super eye-opening experience too.
Yeah, I completely agree. We're technically running out of time, but I am curious, since you have kind of been traveling more recently, where's your favorite place that you've been?
You know, I've been mostly in Southeast Asia, and a little bit around Europe, but I would say my favorite place has been Hong Kong, the place I was living. And I think part of that is because I was able to really get to know the culture better than anywhere else. Because when I was, you know, spent a couple weeks in like Korea or Thailand, Singapore, any of these places, it's great, and I can see quite a bit, but I don't, like I was saying earlier, you don't become a local somewhere and you're kind of still behind this wall of being a tourist. So definitely I appreciate the Hong Kong culture and the people and just what it's like to live there. That's given me quite a fondness for Hong Kong above anywhere else.
That's
Yeah.
lovely. And I also think Hong Kong's really cool. I've never lived there, but I've traveled there a
All
couple times
right.
and I think it's
Yeah,
such a cool
it totally
place.
is. It's like nowhere else.
Yeah. Thank you so much for hopping on the podcast today. I just think it was really cool to be able to talk to you about kind of life years and travel and the importance of taking an
Yep.
unconventional route.
No, thank you so much for having me. This was awesome. I'm happy to be able to share my story here, have a conversation.
Thank you for listening to The Flick. You don't have to share or follow, but it'd be really cool if you did. Thanks for listening.